The playoffs are near, and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can you see it? Did you notice?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves.
To the line, Hughes scores!
In this existence, take you to.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes, beat reporter here. Like, I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our heart. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, hockey season. That will get you $5 off your order at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic on all platforms. Zephyr Epic ships free anywhere in Canada from...
From Kamloops to Kingston, Nova Scotia.
From Kamloops...
Kingston, Ontario. Kingston, Nova Scotia.
But also Kingston, Ontario.
Actually, I've heard that they don't go... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, they ship to Kingston, Ontario.
Canada-wide, Zephyr Epic ships free on any order over $50. So go check them out. Follow them on all social platforms. Z-E-P-H-Y-R Epic. They've got you covered on all of your trading card needs, whether that be the Pokemon cards, the Yu-Gi-Oh cards, the basketball cards, the hockey cards, which we are partial to. Go check out Zephyr Epic. .com. We're also delivered to you by the great folks at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word, CONVODD. That will get you 25% off and free delivery on your first order with the DoorDash app. Does not get much better than that, folks. My name is David Quadrelli. I am joined, as always, by the man who built the place fresh off a hot Canucks trade deadline. This is fresh off the press. Not a press because it's a podcast. I don't know what the term would be. It's a podcast. Trade deadline recap show. Chris Faber.
Yeah, you said a hot day. It wasn't even that either. You basically just ruined the last 15 seconds with incorrect.
It was hot in the car on the way here.
Well, it was, yeah.
Down the window.
Well, I had the heat on. I left this morning bright and early, and I tell you, it's so damn cold in the morning still, but it's starting to get to that nice little temperature during the day, which I appreciate. I appreciate that about BC and this West Coast living that we do. But it was cold in the morning. I had it cranked up to 80 degrees in the car. Anyways, trade deadline. This is our first episode since obviously all of the trades have happened, all three of them, which we'll recap, as well as the pickup as well. I guess you want to just do it in chronological order.
Yeah, I think that's the best way. Harmon Dial will be joining us shortly. I know you probably saw in the title or description that Harmon's going to join us. Harmon has to do the VanCast. Okay.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Harmon has to do a podcast that shall remain nameless. And he's going to be joining us shortly, but we did want to at least get the start of it done, get all our ad reads.
You should actually check, see it. Speaking of VanCast, is Drance available? Give him a call real quick.
Let me check.
Hello, thank you for calling Thomas Drance.
Straight to voicemail, eh?
Straight to voicemail again.
Frickin' this guy, Thomas
always,
Drance.
Always puts us to voicemail.
Now I see why these people got him at Twitter. He's got us blocked.
Maybe these people are onto something. I'm joking. Drance is a good guy.
These people have some thoughts.
And Drance helps us out a lot. We like Drance. Okay, Harmon Dial joining us shortly. But the Vancouver Canucks with, I don't even want to call it a busy trade deadline, Chris, because I think aside from the Hamonic deal, and obviously Dermott comes with that, aside from those deals that happened on Sunday, I don't think the Canucks did anything we weren't expecting. Like, this was basically the bare minimum, was it not, to move Tyler Mott? We'll recap the deals, and then we'll kind of break it all down. But just to recap what the Canucks did on the deadline, don't forget Brad Richardson, but Travis Hamonic started everything off when he was traded to the Ottawa Senators for a third-round pick. No salary retained, folks. So
what the hell are the Ottawa Senators thinking, dude?
So hold on. We gotta break this down first. No laughing. No laughing at the Ottawa Senators yet.
Oh, my God.
Okay. The thing about this deal is Hamonic is signed this year and next to a $3 million deal. Now, when this deal was signed in the offseason, it wasn't a good contract. It wasn't necessarily a bad contract. But when you take into account everything that happened with Hamonic this year and, you know, how he was late coming to camp. He was, you know, not playing games. You know, he was up and down and all this stuff was happening. He was injured. There was a lot of stuff happening with Travis Hamonic this year. Hasn't appeared in a ton of games. And when he did, he wasn't very good.
Dude, and he was available on waivers four months ago.
That's the thing.
You could have picked him up for absolutely nothing. What is it? The waiver fee is what? $3,000? It's $3,300 or something to pick up a waiver player? They could have done that. Instead, they wanted to give up a third-round pick. Thank you to Pierre Dorion and whatever's going on there.
Eugene Melnyk did not want to spend $3,300.
Oh, my gosh, dude. What a ridiculous trade from the Ottawa Senators. Thank you so much, because this made... Like, this trade deadline's a much lower grade for me if you don't get this Hamonic deal done, because not only did you lose Hamonic's $3 million cap hit of this season, he was signed for next year for $3 million. And you were able to get a third-round pick out of this to basically, like, flip your possession of Winnipeg's pick for Travis Dermott, which we'll get to in a minute. But I could not believe this deal got done. And I think the more time, like when it first happened, it was like, what? I can't believe this. You look at the replies from the folks in Ottawa and like, oh my goodness. But this, what a fleecing by Patrick Alvin and Trader Jim. Like, these guys, this made the trade deadline good for them because of that. That was an A-plus trade for the Vancouver Canucks perspective to get away from some money. And somehow, I would have, in my eyes, trading Travis Hamonic would have been like, if you were to give like a seventh to go with Hamonic, I would have done that deal. To think that you're able to get like pretty good value back, what a great deal for the Vancouver Canucks moving on from Travis Hamonic and bringing in a third round pick there. I loved how that started off the weekend.
And of course, the thing to keep in mind is they got their own pick back. Like, that third round pick that they traded for and got back from Ottawa was one that they dealt to Vegas for Nate Schmidt.
Yeah.
So they had Winnipeg's pick. So try and keep up here, folks. They traded Winnipeg's third round pick to Toronto in the Dermott deal, which we'll get to in a sec. But they had that pick because they traded Nate Schmidt to Winnipeg for a third round pick. So the reason you want your own picks, for anybody wondering, is if you ever want to offer sheet, you need your own picks. You can't have pick compensation with another team's picks. You have to have your own picks. So now the Canucks have all their own picks. I mean, they don't have a second. Thank you, Jim. Wait, there's a button for that.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
They don't have all of their picks because of that trade. Obviously, the second round pick is with Arizona thanks to the OEL Garland deal, but they do get a third round pick back, and that brings us to our next trade here, Chris, because a third round pick, Winnipeg's.
Hold on, before we move on to that one, I just want to say it one more time. This trade for Hamonic is unreal. The Canucks really get this much value for a guy in Travis Hamonic's situation. I can't believe it. We heard, I think Rick Dhaliwal had it today on Donnie and Dolly, that some of the Canucks were happy that this move even happened because there was
Saravalli
had it. Right, that's right. He was on Helfrich and Brough this morning. And yeah, I mean, like, there was so much baggage behind Travis Hamonic this year. And I can't get over the fact that he was on waivers 4 months ago. Could have had him for free 4 months ago. The Canucks were able to get a third round pick. I feel for the Senators fan base, man. I think the Canucks fan base has it hard sometimes. And it just seems like the Sens every year, every couple of months, actually, just something else just happens for this poor, poor fan base out there in Ottawa.
Now, not to dump on Hamonic or the Senators too much, because, you know, it's obviously very easy, especially when it comes to this deal for the Senators, to dump on the Senators themselves. But Mark Methot, who used to play for the Sens and is still very plugged in, tweeted this about the acquisition. He said, "It's a weird acquisition for sure. I honestly haven't followed the on-ice play of the player, Hamonic, in some time. I can say this. I know lots of players. All of them have told me that the new acquisition is a bit of a different bird. Not sure that's what I'd want around a young core." And then he said, "Of course, I could be wrong. The problem is, I'm usually correct." Chris, we know, and then obviously, like you said, Saravalli today said Patrick Alvin gained some support from the locker room today by trading Hamonic because he had overstayed his welcome, I believe was the verbiage that Saravalli used. So the thing that I wanted to say about this is, again, not to dump on a guy too much, but when you talk to people in Long Island, when you talk to people in Calgary, there's a bit of a trend with Hamonic, and it kind of echoes what we just read from Mark Methot. So I'll leave it at that. All the best, Travis Hamonic. Yeah. I'll just leave it
at
that. You
know, I heard from guys in the AHL that really liked his presence
out
there.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think that there was obviously some good. The guys seemed to like him. From what all we heard in public, I don't know what the players thought about him not showing up to camp, not doing the whole vaccination thing.
If you ask a player publicly, they're all going to say they loved him.
Yeah,
right? As they should. You don't dump a guy when he's out the door.
For sure.
Leave that to the media. That's our job.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, I guess, moving forward. But I'll tell you, what a steal. Let's get to the Dermott deal.
Exactly.
Or as Murph calls him, Mick Dermott. I don't know what
I felt bad. I made that mistake too, but I made it in my own head.
It was a bit. I thought he was trolling for a little bit.
No, I did the same thing. But like I said, I did it in my head and then immediately knew I was wrong. Murph did it on air. Poor guy.
A few times too.
We've got to have him back on to defend himself.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get behind the whole Mick bit.
All right. Regardless, the next trade the Canucks made was another good one. And it was about this Travis Hamonic deal, kind of played into it. It was shortly after, like less than 2 hours after, Canucks trading Winnipeg's third round pick that they had from the Nate Schmidt deal. Third round pick to the Toronto Maple Leafs for Travis Dermott, left shot defenseman who's going to play on their bottom pair, really solidifies that bottom pair. I talked to a scout, Chris, who said that Dermott can not only play on both sides, but the analytics would suggest, and I hate saying that, but the analytics would suggest that there is a lot of untapped potential there. Now, they suggested similar things to a much lesser degree, of course, when Jimmy Vesey and Travis Boyd were acquired as well. So do with that what you will. But I am excited regardless because, look, whether you think Dermott or Hamonic is better or not, and I think the answer is quite clearly Dermott, whether you think they're better or not, the cap hits alone, the fact that it's even close to some people, the cap hits alone should tell you that the Canucks won this swap.
No, absolutely. You get your third round pick back. You also get the opportunity to shed $1.5 million of cap space. I'm not sure how I feel. I'm not in like a, this is a home run move for the Canucks, a third round pick being moved out. I'd love to see the Canucks have more draft picks to be able to add.
Sure, sure.
Add some defensemen to their prospect pool, a thing they've needed for a long time. But you know what? They went the direction of going on a guy who, little bit of, I wouldn't say risk, but you're taking a chance with this player, right? Like a third round pick is going to get you a half decent prospect that you can add to the pool and hope that he develops into something. And with Dermott, you're getting a player who's 25 years old, I believe. And a lot of people believe, like you said, there is some untapped potential there. The exciting thing about him is the way that he plays as a defenseman is the type of style that we're seeing the NHL evolve into, where it's so reliant on the ability to be able to skate the puck up the ice, make the first pass. And he's a player who he sounded excited this morning. He was on Helfrich and Brough talking about getting a new opportunity. And sometimes as an NHL player, you and a coach don't really disagree on the, or you and the coach don't agree on your playing time and what role you're going to play for the team. there's going to be opportunity for him the rest of the season here. And this isn't a guy who's played like 10 games this year for the Maple Leafs, right? It was something in the 40s for him. So he was getting into a decent amount of games, just not really playing into the role. And then with Rasmus, Rasmus Sandin over there as a defenseman, kind of jumping him in the depth charts, there was an idea, I think, for a while. He kind of mentioned that he was going to be getting out of town and to come here to Vancouver, a spot where he's been a closet Canucks fan. He said that he used to grow up playing as Roberto Luongo in the Sedins on NHL. That was his favorite team to play with in the video game. And that's what made him a Canucks fan. Said that he had a BlackBerry case with a little Canucks thing on the back. It was the battery cover. Before your time, Quads, BlackBerries used to be a thing, and getting a nice case for it was a good... It was a good little flex, and he said that's what he had. He had a BlackBerry case with a Canucks logo on it. So shout out to Dermot being a closet Canucks fan over there, born in Newmarket, Ontario.
That absolutely rocks. This is the quote that I got from a scout when I asked about Travis Dermott. Travis Dermott is essentially the platonic ideal of a third-pairing defenseman. He's consistently produced strong two-way results, albeit in a sheltered role, and moved the puck effectively well while offering the sort of versatility one should covet in that part of the lineup as someone who can play the left or right side equally effectively. If nothing else, he's a quality option at the bottom of the lineup and cost-controlled for the next two seasons at least. At just 25 years old, perhaps there's untapped potential further up the lineup as well. So that was the Sunday trades. Today, Monday, Chris, when we're recording this, Tyler Mott traded to the New York Rangers for a fourth-round pick. Now, the reaction to this deal is a bit mixed. Like, I understand there's a lot of people out there saying, oh, well, you should have got more, but look, like Mason Appleton goes for a fourth. A lot of these players that I know Canucks fans value Tyler Mott quite a bit, as does his agent, as he should. I know he's like seventh on the team in ice time, which would suggest he's more of a third liner that plays on the fourth line role, but to the trade market, he's a fourth liner. Like, that's how he's valued, and he went for the cost of what we saw fourth rounders going for. So, a fourth round pick from the New York Rangers in exchange for Tyler Mott. Patrick Alvin spoke today and basically said what we all already knew. They decided once they realized they couldn't get him signed and they weren't going to come to an extension that they needed to get an asset for him. And I'm sorry, but this is something that we were clamoring for during the Jim Benning era was if you know you're not going to sign someone, get something for them. Don't just let them walk to free agency and get nothing. Like you said, Jack Rathbone was taken with a fourth round pick. Yep. Like, give your scouting staff something to work with here.
Give them more than, yeah, I mean, you're going into this draft already missing picks, right, before this trade. So to get a fourth-round pick, listen, it's not the value that I was expecting back. Like, I was really thinking that the Canucks were able to get at least a third-round pick. I was thinking something like in the realm of third and sixth, third and fifth, a second maybe if you got lucky. I was a little surprised to see that it was just a fourth-round pick coming back. I do wonder if there was some time kind of wasted by the Vancouver Canucks really attempting to get a last-minute deal done in extensions, but I had a feeling that Mott's camp and from all the conversations I heard from his camp were that they were pretty steady on a number and they weren't really going to budge from it. And I think the Canucks were also pretty steady on their number and weren't going to budge for it. So I don't think that these conversations were had that deep into the night. I think both sides had an understanding that they were far away and weren't going to get a deal done. So I was a little surprised to not see the Mott deal done sooner. I thought you could potentially see in the morning. I was a little surprised to see him play even in the Sunday night game. I thought at that point, maybe that's when you're having the conversation about moving Tyler Mott and having a real serious conversation with other teams. What I believe is that there was some sort of deal kind of on the table and something they wanted to push a little bit late from the Vancouver Canucks giving away on Sunday night, like Sunday night into Monday morning. I think the Canucks were still really in the eyes that they could get a final deal done for an extension. And obviously they didn't get to that point. They ended up moving on for a fourth round pick and good for them. Like getting some return is good, but I'm still curious. Like I wonder if Mott could have gotten more value over this time. I have to imagine Quads. Like I know that the thought process is maybe the NHL doesn't value him like he's valued here in Vancouver, but I'm still in the camp of like, I don't believe that this was the best offer for Tyler Mott all season long. I would have to imagine that at some point, some team was willing to give a third round pick for Tyler Mott, whether it be in the last week or in the last couple months. I think that you could be able to get at least a third. I don't see a world where a pick I don't see a world where this was the best offer for Tyler Mott all season long. So I do wonder if there's a little bit of a mistake on when the decision was made to move on from Mott. I'm glad they got something. I think it would have been horrendous to watch him just skate out the rest of the season with the Canucks totally. After they're out of playoff contention. I'm glad they got a pick. But I am a little surprised. I just think that there had to be a better offer on the table at some point this season for Mott.
Yeah, and I don't think it's hard to disagree with that. You know what I mean? Like the question always comes up of when do you have the time? When's the time to move him, right? And obviously the Canucks view the deadline as that. And I have to say, I think they were hoping for more, Chris. And when we saw the trades that were happening, a lot of them were players that were admittedly better than Mott. Hagel comes to mind, right? Obviously, he went for a king's ransom. But when you look at the trades that happened leading up to the deadline, it looked like, okay, Mott's going for a third, maybe a second.
I was thinking but third then, minimum, right?
But then once you see that Mason Appleton trade, right? And when you start to see what these players who are viewed as fourth liners going for, then it was, okay, I think the price tag's going down on Mott. I don't think they're getting as much as we originally thought they would for Tyler Mott. We'll break all this down with Harmon Dial a little bit more when he comes. We've got a poll question. We'll get to it. But first, let's have a word from our sponsors on the other side. We'll break it down more with Harmon, get into the poll question. Keep it locked, keep it loaded on Canucks Conversation.
And before we go any further into the episode, want to give a shout out to Parallel 49 Brewing. You guys can find Parallel 49 beer all across BC and Alberta. And right now we want to give a quick shout out to the Unparalleled Pack featuring four of the P49 favorites, the Trash Panda, the Filthy Dirty, the Jerkface 9000, and the Hillbilly Ninja. My favorite of the four there, the Jerkface 9000, the pink can. Something good about those cans there at Parallel 49. So go out and try them. You can find them in most liquor stores across BC and Alberta.
And a massive thank you to Parallel 49 Brewing for sponsoring this podcast. Folks, if you want to advertise with us, shoot us a message, any of us on Twitter, at Quadrelli, at ChrisFaber39.
Yeah, except for Harm. Harm gets all this money from coming in here with these appearances. He doesn't need any more of that.
Harm gets the message about sponsoring the podcast. He's like, how would you like to sponsor me only? I had your mic into my bad arm. All right. Our episode 248 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods. Go to atlasgds.com and use promo code CC15 to get 15% off your first order. Folks, these are the best fresh pork rinds that you can find. They come from the microwave or your air fryer. They're fantastic.
You know what I picked up? I got some of that white cheddar popcorn, whatever, sprinkle stuff.
And?
Flavor. I haven't put it on yet. I just bought it last night when I went to Superstore. I went on my walk, which I seen a review somebody wrote that this is the perfect podcast to listen to when you're walking around Superstore at 10 p.m., which is very true. And that's what I did last night. Got myself a white cheddar seasoning mix there.
There was a review that I read, and the person said, if you want hockey talk, this is not the podcast for you. And I was like, oh, darn. But then I saw it was 5 stars. They came back strong. They were like 5 stars. I love it. And they were like, yeah, if you just like hockey talk, this isn't the podcast for you. These guys have great personalities, which is true of you too, of course. And it was good. It was great. So best fresh pork rinds you can find, go to atlasgds.com. Again, use promo code CC15 to get 15% off your first order. Our poll question today, what letter grade do you give Alvin and Co. for this trade deadline? A, B, C, F. Alternatively, I'm angry. Harmon, let's start with you because you're obviously just joining the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's a solid B for me. I think starting it off with a bang in terms of moving that Travis Hammack contract, if you told me they would have been able to move it for free, especially in this flat cap economy, moving salary out is so difficult. Go back to last offseason, there were so many teams that wanted to move out bad salary that they just couldn't do it. And for the Canucks to be able to take Travis Hamonic, who is a bottom pair defenseman making $3 million, he's redundant and been outperformed by Pullman and Shen and even Burrows, I think, has had moments where he's been, it's at least like they've performed at a similar
level. It's close.
There.
It's close and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. And so you can replace Hamonic's contributions at right around the $1 million mark. And so for the Canucks to not only get rid of that, but also net a third round pick in return, that trade is a grand slam. Now, obviously, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the biggest needle mover, but it's the sort of win that I don't think would have, like, if you told me ahead of the deadline they're going to be able to move out of that Hamnick contract without retaining and without giving up an asset and actually getting one back, you're doing cartwheels if you're a Canucks fan there. Now, the third round pick for Travis Dermott. Now, that's interesting to me because I've kind of gone back and forth on this one in terms of there was that debate of what would you rather have, the third round pick, which I don't know if you're necessarily looking to use it in the draft because it may take a long time to develop, but maybe even in, we talk a lot about offseason opportunities and to bid on these players that come up, you need picks. And so maybe that's the sort of third round pick that you can use as a trade asset versus taking the roll on the dice with Travis Dermott. I've gone back and forth on that. I don't mind the bet on Dermott at all. I think he's got a pretty clear floor as an above average third pair defenseman. He's versatile in that he can play both sides. He is mobile, moves the puck well, which are attributes that the Canucks desperately need back there. I am interested to see what he can do with more confidence, especially in Boudreaux's system, because he's also the type of player that excels in an environment where there's freedom to pinch and keep plays alive in the offensive zone. And he's a very aggressive player, and even the gaps that he plays defending the rush. Now, he's interesting to me as well because, and actually, you know what? We can save the Travis Dermott deep dive for maybe later in the pod. But I'll just say, interesting roll of dice there.
The thing I'd like to throw back to you here is, like, I look at that deal and I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I think you have value, whether it be in the trade market or even just using it on a prospect with that third round pick. I'm not agreeing in the same realm, and I don't think you're saying this, but it's not a home run making the trade for Dermott. You're taking a risk here at this time, but you would have also been taking a risk if you're drafting a player in this upcoming draft in the third round. What I'm curious to see is how much interest was there from the analytic department of the Vancouver Canucks, as well as the pro scouting staff, about Dermott that made them want to pull the trigger with a third round pick, right? Because if I look around the league and I see a guy who's in a situation like Travis Dermott was, I can see a spot where he's swapped for a fourth round pick. So to think that the Canucks moved up and wanted to make the move for a third round pick, I think they were one of the teams that, if I just look at the trade market, was probably one of the only teams offering a third round pick for that type of player. I think if we're talking about like a fourth or a fifth being dealt here, it's a big home run for me there. I just wonder, bringing in a third for Hamonic felt like such a massive win that we haven't seen Dermott play yet. And you bring up a lot of good points about him fitting into Boudreaux's system, but I wouldn't call that one an absolute win just yet either, because you're going to have to see what happens with the player. But a 25-year-old is a lot different than an 18-year-old as well, with how they're going to develop, if they develop. You've already seen this guy playing 250 NHL games. You know he's an NHL player. Would you say that the base and the floor of him is just a third-line defenseman at this point? Like, you know he's going to be, you know, a 5-6 guy. He's not a 7-8 guy, right, in the NHL?
Oh, 100%. And that's interesting, too, where if you look at his underlying profile, he's crushed it in bottom pair minutes. And for a long time, I think Leafs fans actually expected that, hey, this is a guy with legitimate top four upside. And that's where it is. Like, I'm curious to know whether the club sees potential untapped upside, especially he's mentioned the confidence aspect, and he'll have the opportunity here to do so. Because, and it also fits the type of reclamation project defenseman that Rutherford's usually targeted in Pittsburgh, right? When you look at Justin Schultz as one example of just this athletic type of D-man who can skate, who can move the puck, who has warts and other deficiencies in his game and maybe hasn't found the perfect fit, but they're willing to roll the dice on a player like that. And to me, I just think Dermott is a classic example of, and I cannot emphasize this enough, how when he broke into the league, Dermott legitimately crushed third pair minutes, like crushed. There were a lot of Leafs fans that, going back to some of those Boston series, were going, why is Ron Hainsey playing so many minutes on the top pair? Let's feed Travis Dermott more ice time, more minutes. And to me, he sort of fits. There's this certain player type that comes up where you have this like young sort of early to mid 20s defenseman who, this player type is athletic, moves the puck well, and crushes analytically in soft minutes. And you just don't know sometimes whether they're going to keep that up as they step up in the lineup. Like, there are tons of examples of them, right? Nate Schmidt is a perfect example. When he started in Washington, was a very similar profile as Dermott. But then on the flip side, there's also like Colin Miller, who similar situation, crushed bottom pair minutes analytically, just wasn't ever trusted enough defensively in the top four. Another example that panned out was in Florida, Mackenzie Weegar. I remember talking about him as a trade target for years of, hey, this guy crushes minutes. He moves the puck really well. Excellent transitionally. He's an example of a guy that panned out. Vince Dunn is another example of the contrary. Crushed bottom pair minutes. He can move the puck really well. And he hasn't been able to work in a top four role. And you just don't know until you test it out. Now, we've seen glimpses of it not working out initially in Toronto. But again, with confidence, with a fresh start, I think that's what the Canucks are going to roll the dice on. And it's one of those situations where at minimum, he's a high end third pair defenseman in my eyes. And we'll see if there's anything else beyond that.
I think that's the exciting thing for the current situation he's coming to. Let's look at what happens with the top four and specifically the left side. Quinn Hughes is going to be the number one. That's not going to change at any point this season. But I find it interesting what's happening right now with OEL and the downtrend between OEL, if he's battling an injury, if he needs less minutes. He's a guy who's averaged 22 and a half minutes all season long, but over the past basically 6 to 4 weeks, I think it feels like everything's trending down, whether it be minutes or just effectiveness from OEL. Does that feel like the situation where Dermott, like in my mind, it makes a lot of sense for if you want to try a guy in the top four, or you want to be able to say, like, almost a game-to-game basis, is he a top four or is he not a top four? You can try that with Dermott as the season goes on here, because OEL is going to need some rest. Like, it's very clear to see that he's struggling with something. I don't know, you know, a lot of people are leaning towards injury. I don't know if it's that, if it's confidence or just his body at this age. He's dealing with something and can definitely go for being a third-pairing guy for a handful of nights over the next, you know, I basically think like next month you could see some games where OEL's maybe playing 14 to 16 minutes a night. Maybe that's a night where you see Dermott touch 20. And if he's successful and he looks good in those games, awesome. That really helps your left side. It also might give you some options to use him on the right side down the road, because when I watch tape of Dermott specifically kind of diving into just the points that he's putting up, I couldn't believe how many of the points were coming when he starts. A lot of them kind of came from faceoffs where he was on the right side, because it was his ability. I wouldn't say to use the one-timer, but just that effectiveness of something you kind of talk about, Harm, when you talk about players going down on their downward side, going down. It felt like the opposite with Dermott, because he was able to make a pass from the right side as a left shot guy. It opened up so many things for him to make the cross-ice pass. I saw points coming that way. I also saw points coming just off of the shots that he was making as a right side guy off of faceoffs. So I'm curious to see how they use him in that role, whether he's going to be the third pairing guy on the left side, or if we're going to see him maybe, you know, team up with a guy like Brad Hunt and try and bring some offense to a third pairing. Like, there are some real options for him here. But I think one of the things I want to see as the season goes on this year, especially when the Canucks get to the point where, listen, like, they're going to be eliminated from playoffs at some point here, that's when you'd like to see Dermott be pushed a little bit and kind of, you know, lean back a little bit on OEL. I think that Dermott has the potential to at least try it this season. And it's not like you need to wait years before you give him that opportunity. You can give him that opportunity now. I think you're confident enough in the player that he is right now to at least give him a shot as your fourth guy on your defense corps.
For sure. Yeah, and you brought up a great point with OEL there, and I do think it's pretty clear he's laboring in some sense physically. He's skating a lot more like Edler than the OEL we saw.
That's a really good comparison, actually.
Well, it's especially the way he's getting kind of turned off the rush and the way you're watching him go back on defensive zone retrievals. We saw OEL skate a lot better earlier in the season. So now, I don't think OEL is going to get to the point where he's playing 14 to 16 minutes. But is there a scenario where maybe as the season goes on and it becomes clearer that the playoffs are more and more unrealistic, at that point, do you start to scale his minutes back and give Dermott the opportunity to touch 18, 19, 20 minutes a night and just see what you've got? Absolutely. And I do also like the versatility of he can play both sides. And you mentioned some of the offensive success he's had on the right side. There are a lot of players in the NHL who we say, yeah, he can play both the left and the right side. And that can be true. But sometimes a player is better on one side than the other. I think Dermott is genuinely just as good on the right as he is the left. So it's not one of those cases of, yeah, he can play the right side in a pinch. It's no, he's legit good on the right side, just as he is on the left side when he's playing further down the lineup. And I think at this point, I'm just kind of curious to see what the club can do maybe for him to earn defensive trust, because I think that's been the biggest obstacle for him. Is he tilts the ice and he helps drive so much possession, and when he's on the ice, other teams will generate a lot, but he's prone to the big mistake in terms of the wrong, like, he loves to kill plays early in the neutral zone. You'll see it, right? Where he'll close really quickly on his gaps, but the occasional time he will get burned and it'll look really bad. Or in zone, he might make that big mistake. And so that to me is also one of those scenarios where, after looking at the Dermott sort of arrival, I kind of looked at that and went, what does that mean for Jack Rathbone's long-term fit with the organization? Yeah. Because to me, they're pretty similar types. And sure, Dermott will see if he can have some top four upside. There's still a distinct possibility. But he's also 25 years old. And at this point, when you're acquiring him, I think you're more, the more realistic bet is that on a contender, he'd be a third pair guy. And at that point, I'm just mapping things out. They kind of check the same box that Rathbone and Dermott do of, hey, they're transitional puck movers who skate really well, who have defensive question marks about how they can break up plays in zone and whether they can defend top players. And no, you know, Rathbone obviously has more dynamic offensive tools, but Dermott is bigger. He is more versatile in being able to play both sides, and he already has proven to be able to drive high-end third-pair results at the NHL level. And obviously, the Canucks have to be high on him that they gave up a third-round pick for him.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think about, say, like going into next season, I don't think you can put Dermott and Rathbone on the same pair together. And if that's the case, how do you fit Rathbone in? And that's one of the things that I've kind of been wondering is, what does this potentially signal about the organization's view on Rathbone?
It is going to be really interesting. And I know I brought up, like, the way I look at the third pairing now is, I do like some of the things you talked about with Dermott there and being, you know, prone to the big mistake as well. I think this is actually going to be setting up a situation for Tucker Pullman to now, like, prove what he can be as a third pairing guy.
Exactly.
You don't have to ask him to be a top four defenseman anymore, but you want Tucker Pullman to play the way that the reasons that brought him in were kind of described to us as, yes, the defensive guy who's going to just stay in his zone and let Dermott be the primary puck mover. Those were also thoughts that I had about Jack Rathbone, right? Like, Jack Rathbone, I thought, could have came into a third pairing and potentially played with a Pullman or a Hamonic when he was here, because it was going to be a defensive player going with them. I agree with you, and I find it interesting with the Jack Rathbone situation, because it's very clear when Jack Rathbone plays in the AHL that he is a high-end defenseman. Like one of the top defensemen in the AHL right now. It's also clear that he didn't have a lot of luck this year in the NHL, and that definitely made him look a little bit worse than he probably even played this year in the NHL. But you have to imagine that next year, Rathbone has to be knocking on that door to make that jump into the NHL. And you brought it up with Dermott there. Like, it's going to be a hard road for him to play better than the guy who the organization just traded for and traded a decent pick. Because I still do look at this, and the way that I see management groups work, there's a lot of value when they make a trade for a pick that's pretty high. They want that player to pan out, right? Even if Jack Rathbone's the better player, management's still going to want the guy that they traded a pick for to be on that roster next year. So I do find it hard to think that, like, I can see Rathbone improving a lot again this offseason, and I can see him having a really good camp next year. Like, I don't see a world, and I need to see Dermott first, obviously, but I don't see a world where Rathbone doesn't look like he should be in the NHL coming out of training camp next year. And that's going to be a tough decision for the Vancouver Canucks to make.
And even if they, sorry, I just wanted to quickly add to, even if they play on different pairs, right? Like, let's say there's a world where Dermott looks great in a top four role, whether it's on the left or the right side, and that's where you pencil him in. Long term, to me, I don't think you can win in the playoffs having Hughes, Dermott, and Rathbone on the same blue line, in terms of, like, you're just going to get crushed by these bigger teams in the West. Like, a team like Minnesota, that is a lot different than the Minnesota the Canucks saw in the bubble in terms of the, not only the speed but also the pay, the size. Or like Colorado too, everyone talks about their speed and skill. They've got big boys up front, McKinnon, yeah. Rantanen, Landeskog, and Nichushkin. Like, you're not like Hughes, Dermott, and Rathbone is half your blue line. Like, good luck trying to break up the cycle. You're gonna get mauled, or like a team like Vegas in the playoffs. So I love the skill that those three guys have, but obviously Hughes is Hughes. He's your number one D. Yeah. He's your franchise guy. But after that, the way I look at it, and maybe you can make it work in the regular season, and this is something that you think about down the road, but I don't think a Stanley Cup contender is going to have Dermott and Rathbone on the same blue line when you already have Quinn Hughes.
The question I have with Dermott is he, and especially Rathbone, I wonder what, I think there's a decision to maybe get made next trade deadline with these two players in, right? Because Dermott's going to be an RFA, I believe, at the end of his contract next year. You're going to have Jack Rathbone, who I believe will be on his last year of his ELC as well. So you're going to have to kind of make a decision there. Both RFA, so you can keep them pretty easily. But if Rathbone's just down in the AHL all the way up to the trade deadline, and you can get value back for Dermott next year, and you're finding out that, you know, he is just a third-pairing guy, maybe he's able to return something next year in the draft, obviously, or at the trade deadline. But obviously, you need to see how this guy fits. And this, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they play him, how much they play him on the right side, and how much top four time he gets. That's what I'm looking at for the rest of the season, because we know he's a third pairing lefty. He's capable of doing that, but you need to see what he looks like on the right side. You need to see what he looks like when he's playing 18 minutes. You need to see what he looks like when he's killing penalties. That's what you can all test out this year before you make a decision going into next year, and probably make the final decision at training camp on what is going to happen with Rathbone and Dermott. Because I do think that, you know, like we've kind of said here, you know, there is a lot of upside to Rathbone's game if he's able to figure a few things out. And I think some more AHL time this year is going to be good for him. Playoff run's going to be good for him. And then next year at training camp, like, I don't see a world where Rathbone doesn't look like one of the top three left shot guys in this organization next year at training camp.
This is the longest poll question segment ever. Do you guys remember that this started with me talking about the poll question?
I know.
We still haven't read the results of the poll question.
Okay, go for the results.
That's what the people are here for. Okay, so first,
Dermott's an it's just such an interesting thing, right? Like, it really
we were
is.
Going to save the deep dive for later, but we ended up doing.
We just went for it.
It's interesting, man. I find it so interesting.
It was good stuff. Just to recap, though, the question we asked was, "What letter grade do you give Alvin and Co for this trade deadline?"
Harm answered it.
Yeah, I know you guys answered it. I have to read what the folks that voted on it. That's what the listeners want. They want to hear what the other listeners said. Yeah, so
they don't care about us. They
A, B, C, or F.
Go look at it at Canucks Convo right now. Check it out.
Okay, yeah. So B is leading the vote with 62%. C comes in second with 21%. And 9% of people say F/ I'm angry. 8% gave them an A. Again, that was our 248 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods. Go to atlasgds.com. Use promo code CC15.
I got a question
for you guys. Get 15% off. And well,
what do you got? You say B?
I want to say something more. Yeah, okay. I said B as well.
Let me just ask quickly. Do you give them an A if Tyler Motte was actually a third-round pick coming back and the Canucks didn't trade for Dermott and kept the third-round pick?
Yeah, I think so.
Because then right there, you're getting rid of $3 million cap space. You're bringing in two third-round picks. Is that an A performance at the deadline?
I think if you trade Travis Hamonic for like a sixth or a seventh, I think you're still giving them
the
an
Travis
A.
The Travis Hamonic deal on his own is like an A++.
Yeah,
like that deal on its own is massively high.
That breaks the scale. You traded Travis Hamonic, a cap dump, essentially. Again, like the guy was on waivers.
A two-year cap dump, too.
The
not
guy
just this
was
year.
On waivers, and every NHL team, including the Ottawa Senators, looked at it and said, "Oh, no thanks. We don't want that at the full cap it." But now, at the trade deadline, you know what? We need some veteran leadership. Let's do it. Can't put a price on leadership, boys.
Yeah. No, okay. What else do you got? You said you got something.
I was going to say, I think something we should incorporate in the poll questions is, because we don't have a text line. I'd love to get a text line going one day. But reading some of the replies. Like, people explain their answers. So, we'll start with Nexus here. Nexus said,
from the gulag, by the way.
They had their prices for pieces they didn't need to move till the offseason, and they got a pick back for a player they weren't likely bringing back, and they didn't trade Shen. So Nexus gives them an A for that reason. Someone else, they didn't say what they gave, but they said okay with the actual transactions, disappointed with the lack of more impactful moves that alter the future trajectory of the franchise. And we'll get to that later, because I did want to talk about that. We're not expecting, but it was rumored that we could hear a name like Connor Garland, Brock Besser, or JT Miller get moved today, and we didn't see any of them get moved. We saw all kind of the low-impact moves that we've been talking about happen. So we're going to talk about that down. But Clay said, at Clayton Twa, TWA probably, each trade in a vacuum, Mott trade is a C+, Dermott trade is a B, Hamonic is an A+, overall I'd say a B. Kind of the thought process I think we all had as well. Mikey Canuck says B would have been A if they got a third for Motter. Getting a return for Hamonic is a big W. Cam Brown says we should have got more for Mott. Thought the Habs and Avs trade involving Lekkonen was a good base to start with. Obviously different players though, right? And again, it's kind of like
a lot better than
exactly Mott. And that's kind of what I was saying is we saw a fourth line player. We saw fourth line player in Mason Appleton get dealt.
He's better than Appleton's third line guy.
Exactly, and that's your price.
Yeah.
Like, that's the price point for Mott. So I think when the market gets set like that, you kind of have to just kind of look at the market, and that's what the country is
working with. Max Domi went for a prospect that was picked in the third round last year.
Yeah.
Max Domi has, I think, 32 points this season. Mm.
Here's what I said in the first half, and we'll get your thoughts, because we'll kind of transition out into the Mott and the return for Tyler Mott here. What I thought is I don't believe that this was the best offer for Tyler Mott all year long. I have to imagine at some point during the season, whether it was 48 hours ago or 2 weeks ago, I can't believe that that was the highest thing offered for Tyler Mott.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. Well, for starters, I should say that the Mott return ended up being in line with, I think, what a lot of other fourth liners went for. It doesn't change the fact that I think it's definitely on the lower end of the spectrum in terms of what we expected. I think third round pick was kind of my expectation, and it was like maybe a second. So fourth round pick, I mean, sure, it's definitely a bit of a letdown, a bit of a disappointment, but it's in line with the market. And I think the one thing that we're kind of realizing is Mott just wasn't as valued around the league the same way he was here in Vancouver. And I think it also got complicated by the number of these sort of depth forwards that were available, right? Nick Paul, for example, out in Ottawa, that Tampa paid a premium to acquire. Tampa was one of the teams rumored to be in the running for Mott, and they were able to pick up Paul, who otherwise there was this, like, will he extend in Ottawa? And it looked like there was going to be a future for him, and he ended up hitting the market. Lekkonen, it sounded like it was going to be a 50-50. And obviously, Lekkonen's a higher-end player. He's more of a middle-six guy, but another sort of piece where it's just about adding forward depth. And he was supposed to be a 50-50 guy as someone who would have been an RFA in Montreal. Was like, okay, we'll give him up. Seattle had a fire sale where we obviously heard that Toronto was interested in Mott potentially as one of the teams. And then they, as part of the Giordano deal, ended up picking up Colin Blackwell as their depth option. And then obviously Seattle also sold on Mason Appleton. And so I just think there were a high number of these depth forwards that I didn't necessarily expect all of them to hit the market.
Yeah.
And I think there was, and I think it ended up for these sort of more depth forwards. And again, maybe Lekkonen's in a different tier. He is, as in terms of ability, but I just think there were a lot of options to choose from in terms of these depth guys. Now, as a contender, if I was a contender, I'd pay a third round pick for Tyler Mott.
I find it so interesting though, that this is a player who, the reason the Vancouver Canucks weren't able to re-sign him is because he's probably going to go for 2.5 on the open market in free agency.
I don't know if he's going to do that, though.
What do you mean? You don't think he's going to get 2.5?
I don't know.
I can see it being very possible.
It's,
I think,
possible if he has a good playoff run, but I don't know, because he's also been injury prone, right?
Yeah, that's true, too. I think that the way that I'm looking at it, though, is a player that is being evaluated around that, we'll say 2.25. Let's say that's the number he gets in free agency. I think he gets more than that with somebody in free agency. So think that that player is valued at his cap hit right now. I'd find the value as a fourth round pick still a little bit low. Like, I do think that at some point this year, there had to be a third on somebody's table for Tyler Mott. I can't see it being the other way.
Sure, but I would agree with your premise, but that banks on the assumption that someone is going to pay him, say, somewhere around Jason Dickinson money, which I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know if that would have been the case. That's, I think, you know, that's the sort of ask I think the Mott camp would have had. That doesn't mean someone's going to step up to the plate and actually pay up for it. So now, actually, this is the perfect opportunity for Mott, if he has a strong playoff run on a high-profile New York Rangers team, getting a strong opportunity with the number of injuries that they had. I mean, there was a point where I looked at the Rangers depth chart. This was, I think, a month ago, and you guys were asking about Miller and what if they package Mott together. And at the time, it was like, oh, their bottom six looks relatively set, but then they started getting a lot of injuries, and now they're at the point where Mott made sense for them. But yeah, I mean, if he has a strong playoff run out east with that sort of spotlight, yeah, I think he'll get that kind of contract. But I don't think it's necessarily a guarantee that he'll be, say, like a two and a half times four type player.
There's a bit of breaking news here. Got a trade to announce. Ryan Kesler is a member of the Vegas Golden Knights now. This is the trade. It actually is kind of a bigger one. Basically, what's happened here is it's a second round pick in 2024, conditional second, for Evgeny Dadonov. No, Evgeny Dadonov and a second round pick in 2024.
Who, by the way, Dadonov was the one who was involved in the Ottawa Senators and Vegas Golden Knights trade for the Vancouver Canucks pick. So there's another Canucks tie.
So the Ducks are getting that. The Ducks are getting Dadonov and a second round pick in 2024. Conditional, not sure what the condition is yet. And Vegas gets defenseman John Moore and the contract of Ryan Kesler. So that's the trade.
This one just came out. It's 4:27 right now.
Yeah, the NHL Central Registry is like running on dial-up right now.
Wow, that's a late one.
No one can use the internet and the phone, and they've got 33 people on hold, so it's taking them some time.
All right.
Brad Richardson. That's the other one. That's the final thing we have to talk about.
Wearing number 13, right?
Wearing number 13 for the Vancouver Canucks. Brad Richardson played 2014-15, I think 15-16 was his last season, if I recall correctly. Maybe
14-15 was...
Yeah, 14-15. Sorry, 14-15 was his last season. I spent two seasons with the Vancouver Canucks, did Brad Richardson. 37 years old now. Not the player he was when the Vancouver Canucks had him last. 37 years old. Harmon, the Vancouver Canucks claim him off waivers from the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I loved him in 2014-15. I thought that he was a sort of bottom six piece. I looked at him and I was like, just re-sign him. Like, don't go out in free agency and pay for like a Brandon Sutter on the trade market or
Jay Beagle.
Yeah.
Pick a name.
Yeah. I mean, I was just like, why not just keep Brad Richardson? He's perfectly fine. He kills penalties. He's responsible at both ends of the rank. He provides a little bit of offense. Now, at 37 years old, he's not the player that he was. How many years ago is that now? Like seven?
Yeah, wild.
We were just picking if we wanted to do physics, chemistry, or biology in high school.
You guys are choosing between fine arts and 14, band 15, at that point.
Yeah.
Did you do fine arts or band? What did you pick?
Fine arts.
I picked fine arts as well.
I was terrible
did band because you got PE all year long when you did band.
That Nanaimo School District. That's not how it worked here. For me, at least.
Oh.
You didn't get to pick and have PE all year. Otherwise, I would have. I played clarinet in grade 7. Okay, we're getting off the rails a bit here, as we so often do.
But Brad Richardson's just a guy now. The Canucks are a little bit banged up. Well, he's going to play. Body.
Yeah, he's going to play fourth penalties. Line center instead of Patan.
Yeah, because that's the thing is, you know, Bruce Boudreau was talking about when they lost Pettersson, and, you know, they had to play Patan and they had to move Highmore to the center position because he said, Highmore's not great at center and we can't really afford to have that. So
you mean to tell me Matthew Highmore is not a top nine centerman, Quads? How dare you?
I know, I'm sorry. Well, neither is Jason Dickinson, apparently.
So. Oh my God, yeah.
Can we talk about a few things from the Alvin presser?
Yeah, I just want to wrap up. When I saw they claimed Richardson, I was like, okay, so now Moth's definitely getting traded.
Okay, yeah.
Well, Brad Richardson's a Canuck. Yeah, do you have anything else to add?
No,
to
I think
it, Chris?
It's fun that they got Brad Richardson, but that's all it is. Like, it's fun that they got this 37-year-old who used to play for the Canucks. Like, we had Yannick Hansen on, like, live when we heard this on 650, and he was like, you know, hearing, like, Yannick talk about, oh, yeah, like, I played with him, and I was just like, gosh, like, Yannick's retired and, like, still did a good job, and, like, we're asking, like, are the Canucks going to pick up Yannick now? Like, he's still smart, obviously, so, like, what's he going to bring on the ice?
Yannick Hansen goes in and just rips everyone in the locker room. He's like, you're not trying hard enough. You're not doing this
well. Well, he's already said he'd walk up to Höglander and be, you belong in the minors. He's already said that on 650.
Oh, jeez. Hey, speaking of which, we'll get to it. We'll get to the papering of Vasily Podkolzin, and then I'll give my
Malvin stuff here that's stuck out.
Yeah. Give your thing. Also, last thing on Richardson, talk to some people in Calgary. He was probably the worst Flames player this year, so don't expect too much. Again, he's a guy that's
shot
gonna...
quads.
He's no, sure. Dude. I'm just saying he has really struggled in all situations this season with Calgary. Also, Calgary's a really good team, so you know, we're excited to see Brad Richardson, but don't get too excited. Yeah, exactly.
Can I start with one that actually that Harm tweeted out from the Alvin presser?
Of course, yeah.
I found, like, not just because Harm tweeted out, because Harm didn't say this is what Alvin said, but Harm had the tweet about Alvin talking about Luke Shen. And, like, and you know what? This makes a lot of sense from watching the last handful of games. Is it's nice to see someone give a bleep, and Luke Shen absolutely does that. And Patrick Alvin was very high on Luke Shen when he spoke about him in the press conference today. And I found that kind of interesting about, you know, the off-ice leadership, the on-ice leadership, everything that he was kind of talking about. I think the quote that you have here, Harm, is it's extremely important for a young group to have someone like Luke Shen. So true. And you know what? That's why he didn't get traded today.
Yeah, and he's non-expiring contract. And here's the thing, too. Everyone was like, oh, well, when Benning said this stuff about culture and leadership, you guys ripped him. But it's like, this is different. Luke Shen makes under $1 million. He didn't give him $3 million times 4 years.
They didn't sign Luke Shen because he brings culture and leadership and then overpay for him because of his culture and leadership. That's the difference.
But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I would notice that at all these practices, Luke Shen's always the last guy off. And it's such a cliche thing, but he's such a legitimately good dude. He's won back-to-back Stanley Cups, and he brings legitimate on-ice value, right? He's partnered with Quinn Hughes. And yeah, he shouldn't be in the top four. We know that. But by the same token, this is a blue line where you're not going to find Quinn Hughes' partner overnight. No. And you can still sell him at the deadline if you're out of it next year. And so from that perspective, given how cheap he is, given how productive he's been and how valuable he sort of has been as a stopgap piece, and the culture and all of those factors, I 100% agree. And I think it also comes down to, like, we've heard Boudreau in the past talk about, he hasn't been at times overly impressed with the club's preparedness. I do think that when they mention a young group, this is still a young group that's maturing, right? Like, they aren't there yet in terms of being able to control a locker room, and they're not this well-oiled machine. They've been very volatile, up and down. They've been very inconsistent, right? Very streaky. They have moments where they've absolutely capitulated and they haven't responded well to adversity at all. And then obviously since Boudreau has taken over, they've looked a lot better and have had runs where they've looked excellent. So to me, they are young and a little bit, it benefits to have that type of father figure like Shen, who can kind of stabilize things and is just going to show up and do the right things all the time.
Absolutely. And you've seen it in the last few games. Like, there are times where the Canucks are just getting dominated in the first period, and then Luke Shen is there to bring the emotion up, lay a hit in the corner, push a guy around in front of the net. We saw him bury Matthew Tkachuk the other day in the Flames game right in front
Boudreau
of the net.
Boudreau, too, in that game.
And multiple times. And, like, I even think back to the Sunday game against Buffalo, laying big hits in the boards when they're starting to lose pace of the game in the first period. Like, this, the things that he's able to bring, this should be a piece that can fit into your, you know, maybe he's the guy playing with Dermott or Rathbone next year on the third pairing, and maybe you're able to use Garland or Besser or potentially Miller, whoever you trade in the offseason. You want to be able to find the partner for Quinn Hughes. It's something, Claude, on the radio show, how much should I bring this up? Every single week, the big trade piece that you get off, the biggest thing, the most important piece for me on this Canucks team, like I said, it's not a third line center. It's not a top six winger. It literally is the Quinn Hughes partner. The next 6 years, you need to find the guy who makes sense with Quinn Hughes, because to get the most out of Quinn Hughes, he needs to have the right guy. And Luke Shen's done a good job, but he's the guy who should play with Quinn Hughes when the injury happens to that guy. You need to find that player this offseason with the big picks. And to me, like, Luke Shen, I think, could be a good piece moving forward. And I'd like to see him in the lineup next year, but he doesn't need to be playing with Quinn Hughes next year, unless it's your last option.
And here's the thing, is we want to get this in quickly. They didn't trade a big name, right? And you just mentioned using a pick to get that partner for Quinn Hughes, and I think that's a fine long-term idea, but I also think you kind of need a stopgap, because you can't expect Luke Shen to do this next year, and nobody's on the way. So you have to do something in the near future, because you don't want an unhappy Quinn Hughes who's cycling through partners for the next 2-3 years and while they wait for his partner of the future to marinate in the AHL or to come up through whatever ranks he's drafted through. So my question to you guys is, Faber, you and I, when we talk about this, we talked about Connor Garland, JT Miller, Brock Besser, those are the guys. Those are the guys that are going to get you a player who can play in the top four and can play alongside Quinn Hughes on the right side. Canucks didn't get that today.
And you know what I found interesting? The Avalanche traded the two guys that I had targeted for right Ds. They traded Justin Barron. They traded Drew Helleson, two big right shot guys who are close to the NHL. And the Avalanche traded both of them. So these players are out there and available. Like, yeah. You can make this trade in the offseason with the LA Kings, who have very similar right Ds that are very close to the NHL.
And that's what I was just going to say. Now, in my mind, the focus turns to the offseason because you can't keep all three of these guys. One of these guys has to move, and you need to get a right-handed defenseman back in return.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say, though, is even with, say, like a Justin Barron or whatever prospect you get, I don't know that that player is going to be plug and play next to Quinn Hughes. Even someone like John Marino, I love John Marino, and I think he can be a really sort of good player if the Canucks sort of target him in the offseason, but he profiles as more of a puck mover type, and I think he would probably be better off anchoring a second pair. I see him as a number three type. I mean, maybe he'd work there. He'd by far be their best right-handed defenseman, but the point I'm trying to make is I think every team in the league would love to move one of their talented top six wingers for that top pair right shot guy. And there just aren't enough of these top pair right shot guys. And I mean, there were tons of teams that had that need for top four righty. I mean, look at Toronto. How many years did Toronto just keep searching and searching? And then they settled for a left shot guy in TJ Brody, who could play the right side and has done it well. But even since then, even after finding that guy in free agency, they still need that guy again because Justin Hull has imploded and they weren't able to find that guy. They had to go and get a lefty in Giordano.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really, really hard to find these right shot guys.
It's why I don't understand why. And, you know, I think the Canucks have flubbed this and the Ben, like, as much as you want to give props to the Canucks and their drafting, sometimes you just need to draft right Ds in the second and third rounds. Like, you just need to, because you have to hope that they can develop in that way. It's not surprising to see, like, I just feel like this kind of happened, especially the last few years. There's a run of right Ds in the second round, just because it's like you can still find NHLers in the second round at that position. And you see a run of it every year in the second round. Right Ds run off. It happened right as the Canucks picked Klimovic. There was a run of right Ds starting with Scotty Morrow, then moving into just multiple right Ds going after. That's what the Canucks need to draft this year. They need to go and do that. Yeah, exactly.
They haven't had enough picks.
Yeah, I think that's what I look at when I look at the trade for Dermott. That's what I thought. I thought, you know, another third round pick would have been nice to take a shot on a right D there. You know, fire down two right Ds that are in the top 100 of the next year's draft. I think that would have been a boost to the team too. I still need to see what Dermott can do, obviously, before you value what he was. But you've seen the Canucks management in the past, the previous regime, go that route of trading third round picks for 25-year-olds and it turning into absolutely nothing, when maybe drafting an 18-year-old, especially a right D, a position of need, would have been something that you could develop into the future, or at least see what's happening with LA, what happened with Colorado. They traded those players that were, you know, exciting right D prospects who were so valuable. That's why, like, it's not a home run for me with Dermott just yet. You got to see what he fits in with, and if he can get that opportunity to play the right side, play 20 minutes a night. You just need to be able to draft these right Ds, and you said it, you need picks for that, right? So that's what it kind of worries me a little bit moving forward here.
Sure. We're going to save your prospect report because I know you have something on McDonough. Save it for Saturday. Save it for the Canucks Army article.
No.
Come on.
We're doing a little tiny
bit
here.
You could talk about McDonough, penciled, but you need
no,
to
not
talk
McDonough,
about the...
Penciled down Pod Colson too.
Well, I want to get that. And that's exactly what I was going to say. You need to explain the papering process to the listeners. You need to talk about this because you were the one that asked about Aiden McDonough. Talk about that. Just not a whole prospect report. Please don't tell me about Dimitri Zlotiev or anybody else. Just please tell us what's going on with the papering process.
You don't get to tell me what I talk.
Disrespect on
well,
Dimitri.
Yeah, we're over an ridiculous. Hour here. Alvin said today, Jack Rathbone and Will Lockwood, said them by name, are two guys that he expects to come up and play at the end of the year. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, so Alvin mentioned both Rathbone and Lockwood to get an opportunity to hopefully work up their way to the NHL, play some games. He was saying he was hopeful of it. He said they were also looking good out in Abbotsford. Patrick Alvin's been out at Abbotsford multiple times. It's nice to see his face out there. Never saw Jim Benning out there in Abbotsford, so it's been good to see Patrick Alvin out there and actually, you know, watching these guys play. Aside from him, it was interesting to hear, and the question was asked, I believe, by J-Pat or PJ potentially. Somebody asked if Vasilipod Kolzin was papered down. And for people who don't understand what that is, if you're papered down to the AHL, specifically a guy in a two-way contract, it's very easy to do. Paper him down for today, bring him back up to the NHL, or I don't even think you need to push him down, send him up. Anyways, they paper him down to the AHL. He's now available for the Abbotsford Canucks on their playoff run. The Abbotsford Canucks season ends on April 30th. The Vancouver Canucks season ends on April 29th. So it'll be interesting to see how and when Podkolzin does get sent down, because I'll be surprised if they just send him down right at the playoffs. Maybe he gets a little bit of time going into that before, but the AHL playoffs are going to start at the beginning of May, and it's a strange series. It's like a best of three, a best of five, a best of five, a best of seven, then a best of seven. Like, there's a lot of hockey to be played if the Abbotsford Canucks go on a deep run, and they have a good amount of players on their roster who can go on that run. There's going to be a really talented team, and adding Podkolzin in that group is great. I'm curious, Harm, like, I get your opinion on this. Do you think Podkolzin sent down before that end of season here to get more opportunity, not play on a line with Chiasson and Nick Petan? Like, do they want to see Podkolzin in a similar spot to Quads? You mentioned this on the drive over. Do you want to see more of the Rathbone approach to Vasily Podkolzin, or is he too good of an NHL player right now to do that?
It's a really good question. I think for me, I would kind of think to myself, given how little time he's had when he was in Russia, and especially in the KHL, to be the guy on a team, to be the front line. You're playing top line. You're playing first unit power play. You're going to kill penalties. You're going to play 18, 19, 20 minutes a night and be our leader, our go-to guy. I would kind of lean towards thinking, hey, maybe towards the end of the season, you do, before the start of the playoffs, before the end of the regular season, maybe give him some games. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to how Podkolzin himself feels. What is he most comfortable with? Because it's been a huge learning curve. Just imagine yourself in his shoes of going to a country where you don't even speak the language, trying to adjust to a new culture, get acclimated to a new city, a new organization. You don't really know anybody on the team. There aren't any other... None of your teammates speak the same language as you, and you're trying to fit in and be a part of the guys, and you're trying to adjust to the North American ice surface. You're trying to adjust to the NHL game, which is a big jump. All that thrown at you at once. I think for me, you'd have to have that conversation with Podkolzin and be like, explain to him the rationale of, okay, these are the pros of this opportunity in the AHL, of us sending you down. And just work and have that open and honest dialogue, and then let him sort of have at least some input, because that way you don't want to end up in a scenario where maybe he just doesn't want to, you know, maybe this is a situation where it's like he's played a lot of hockey and he doesn't want to adjust or whatever. He doesn't, maybe he's not comfortable with that. So I think it's just, for me, my initial thought is, yeah, I think that'd be great for him. But we'll see. At the very least, it'll be fun to see him in the playoffs. So that'll be good.
And sorry, you asked me my thoughts. I got to give them to you because I'm very adamant that he needs to go down. And I explained this to you in the car, but I'll explain it obviously on the podcast as well. Look, when I look at Vasily Podkolzin right now, I'm seeing a player who is getting similar to deployment to the one, like you said, that we all complained about when he was with Ska, right? Playing fourth line minutes, not really doing anything, not being the guy. And I think something I've criticized the team all season long for is not putting him on the power play unit, not putting him on the first power play unit specifically. But right now he's not getting any power play time. He's not killing penalties. He's just skating. He's playing on the fourth line. He's playing with Nick Petan and Alex Chiasson. He's not developing, and he has long-term interest with this organization. Like, if you want him to become the best player, it's not by playing with Nick Petan and Alex Chiasson or Brad Richardson, whoever's going to replace Petan. It doesn't even matter. Right now, Vasily Podkolzin isn't developing. He's at a pretty stagnant point, but he did develop this year with the NHL team. He took that step from being that guy that had to play those super, super sheltered fourth line minutes, not playing in any situations. Travis Green had him on the power play at a certain point. There were times in November when he was closing out games, he was being trusted with that. And even now, he's still playing sometimes in third periods. But overall, I look at the ice time and I see it as a similar thing to Jack Rathbone and his situation. And with that, I mean, sure, Jack Rathbone's probably better than Brad Hunt right now. Like, Jack Rathbone probably brings more to an NHL lineup than, I'd say, two of the guys at least that are in the NHL lineup and have been in the NHL lineup on a regular basis on this team. I think we saw that last season. I think we saw that in training camp. But I think with what he's doing in Abbotsford right now, again, like 25 points through 25 games, when he comes back, he's going to be better than three or four of the guys that they have on the blue line, right? And that's the whole point of developing your prospects. This is something that Alvin's talked a lot about, how he thinks it's fine. Leave those guys to marinate in the AHL. Let them get really comfortable and really good. I think Rathbone's going to be better for it coming up from the AHL. I think similar things should happen for Vasily Puckholz. And I was telling you this before any of this papering thing even happened. I was going to bring the take today that I think Puckholz, and after watching these past few games, and now the Canucks are out of the race, right, effectively, Puckholz should be in the AHL. He should be getting a ton of minutes. I don't think he's getting much at the NHL level. And the reason I didn't give this take before was because the Canucks were still in it. And rightfully so, I think Puckholz is a better player, like, all around than some of the options they have. Like, I think he's an all-around better player than a few of the options that they have, similar to how Rathbone's better than Hunt and all that sort of stuff that I was just saying. But I think it benefits him more to be in the AHL. Now, I think there's a lot of benefit now for Rathbone, who's played, like I said, 25 games in the AHL, to come up and play in the NHL, absolutely. But I think Podkolzin's gotten that NHL experience, and now he needs to go work on his game in the A.
I agree. The only caveat I'd have, though, is it's very different managing Russians.
Sure, that's
and
fair.
Like when he came over to North America, I can guarantee you going into camp, there's no way. It doesn't matter how bad he looks in training camp, they're not going to send him down.
Yeah,
that it's just a little bit different. So that's where you have to be cognizant. But I agree, from a pure hockey perspective,
totally. And what you said, you got to sit down with him. You got to make sure he understands it, and you have to also get his feelings on it. Because remember,
you need him to buy in.
Exactly. Because remember, this guy lives right next to the rink, like literally right next to the rink, and you know he's got his young wife with him, right? Yeah, Abbotsford's close to Vancouver, but he's going to have to stay out there. You're not going to drive or commute. I know when it happened, they're like, oh, it's only 40 minutes down Highway 1. How fast are you driving down Highway 1?
I've made it out there in 45.
Have you really?
It only takes an hour from Sportsnet for me to get there.
You sneaking through the 45. HOV?
I'm not pulling the harm, no. Harm's got the body sitting beside him, whatever, the dummy beside him in the seat, crash test dummy. No, you can make it an hour out there, but I don't know what you're talking about.
An hour is different than 40 minutes.
2 hours.
Well, we had a couple bad ones, yeah. We had one, too, that was bad.
Driving out to the game?
Yeah.
Which is what Puckholz would have to do, Chris.
Well, hey, let me give Puckholz the advice. You take the 99 down south, you take 16th all the way. Take 16th down there and you're good all the way down there. 16th to 8th.
When Harvin says, make sure Puckholz understands, it really means make sure he understands the route. It's like Faber sitting down with a map.
Yeah, you want to go through South Surrey. That's what you want to do.
It'd be like, what the hell is South Surrey?
No, all but right. Also, I wonder too, like, do you lean on him being like, hey, we also have Klimovich out there who might look up to you?
I was just going to bring that up.
Is this a spot where you teach him to be like a leader towards a guy like Danilo Klimovich? Do you even play him with Danilo Klimovich, who hasn't gotten a lot of top six time this year? But is that a spot where you say, you know, like, hey, listen, Pods, you're going to be a second line guy. You know, it's not like, and honestly, the minutes out there in Abbotsford, Trent Call just rolls four lines always. He's always rolling four lines. So is there a spot where maybe you put Puckholz with Klimovich and maybe see if that maybe gets Klimovich going? Because Klimovich, at the same time, horribly unlucky. I'm calling him the unluckiest guy in Abbotsford right now. He's got a 6% shooting percentage. He's hitting posts. He's having pucks like roll through the crease and just miss the net. I think this is a spot where you can maybe challenge Puckholz to be a leader, because he wants to be a leader. He's always been a leader throughout his career, whether it be the World Juniors or even Ska when they had to deal with the COVID outbreak. He was one of the leaders there. Like, this is a natural leader in him. There's a reason why, though Vancouver fans don't want to hear it, the comparison was Mark Messier. Because, listen, Puckholz likes to be a leader, and I think that would be the way that I would approach the conversation, is tell him to go out there and be a leader with a guy like Danilo Klimovich, who would likely really be happy to have Vasily Puckholz jump out there with him.
Yeah, like I said, like, it goes far beyond just the benefit for Puckholz as well, but I think that's the biggest thing. Just from a pure hockey perspective, obviously, like you said, Harmon, there's more to consider. But from a pure hockey perspective, I think the pros greatly outweigh the cons. That's all we've got for today. Do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah. So I asked about Aiden McDonough and kind of got the answer that, listen, the way I'm reading into this whole situation is he ain't signing. Okay. And this is what Patrick Alvin even said today, was that, so the way that he answered the question was like, we like to let the player make a decision. We're going to try and, you know, tell him why he should come to Vancouver, why he could come play here, but we're going to let the player make the decision when he's most comfortable to go pro. I tell you what, I like just from reading everything around the situation, like McDonough's still obviously in the NCAA playoffs right now. I don't think it's happening this year, folks. As much as I'd like to see it, I don't think it's happening this year. I think he signs next year. I don't think the Canucks lose him. I think the connection with Rathbone in the organization is going to help a lot. Specifically, like we talked about Dermott being here, maybe Rathbone's in the AHL next year, a spot where McDonough ends up landing when they're at the end of the season. We'll see what happens there, but I do think that makes a little bit of a difference there, and helps the Canucks in what they're going to do. I don't think they're going to lose McDonough. As people kind of get worried about it, I think they're going to get him into the Canucks organization. I just think it's going to be next year.
Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff as always. Harmon, thank you for joining us. For my co-hosts, Chris Faber and Harmon Dial, my name is David Quadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The playoffs are near and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.